Chapter 46. The Hecht Center for the Performing Arts was situated kitty-corner from the excavation where Sarah had confronted Los Tecolotes. It was also separated by its own 8-foot hurricane fence topped with concertina wire. Contractors had been working around the clock to finish it off in time for the big event, and it looked like they'd pulled it off. Sarah exited the taxi directly in front of the main entrance, a cascade of crescent-shaped steps in front of the arched entrance. Security in suits greeted each vehicle at the main entrance on Liberty Street. A number of cars were parked directly on the spanking new concrete that would eventually become Hecht Plaza. A number of thin-blooded saplings were held in place by guy wires. The building itself suggested concrete sails, with great, soaring abutments and tiny cube windows punched into its side like player piano tape. At its base, valets in green jackets were busily parking large cars, inches from each other, slotting them in like so many dominoes, leaving barely enough room to squeeze out the doors. As Sarah exited the cab and approached the main entrance, invitation ready, she glimpsed a flash of chrome between the cars. Someone had parked a motorcycle in an alcove too small for a car. She walked back to take a look. A bronze and black Shadow 1100 rested in the penumbra, fitted with crenulated roadhouse pipes and a fishtail tip. This was Sharp's other bike. He'd told her he had a Shadow for cruising. And suddenly it all came together. Akira Kurosawa had directed a film called Kagemusha, which meant literally, Shadow Warrior. Chalmers' rival for the online sword had signed his emails Kagemusha. Sharp was the Shadow Warrior? Had Sharp beheaded Chalmers and taken the sword? Munster said that some crazy monk had cut Sharp with a samurai sword when he was in Japan, said he thought he'd been poisoned or infected somehow. In that instant, had a warrior's restless spirit entered into Sharp? But which warrior? Which blade? There wasn't a lick of proof. It was all circumstantial. Sarah joined the knot of swells waiting to be admitted by a bodybuilder in an Armani suit, carefully examining each invitation before dropping the red rope. Sarah was just about to show her invite when three limos whipped up to the curb, nearly clipping a valet. From the front and rear limos, two well-dressed flunkies sprang into action. A tall young man with styled blonde hair opened the rear door of the middle limo and extended his hand to New York's junior senator. The gatekeeper's eyes were on the senator. "Excuse me," Sarah said, flashing her invitation. "Excuse me, you'll have to wait. The senator's here, and she doesn't like to stand in line." Sarah caught a glimpse of the frosted blonde hair as the senator stalked past, surrounded on all sides by expensively clad bully boys lest one of the hoi polloi try to touch her garment. There was a great deal of cooing and the pop of flash bulbs as the senator entered the building. Only then did the gatekeeper turn his attention back to Sarah. He looked like The Rock, from the Caribbean somewhere, with a slight lilt to his voice. "I'm sorry about that, but we have strict orders to move the senator to the front of the line, always to the front of the line. She is the smartest woman on earth," Sarah agreed sarcastically. "That's right." He examined Sarah's invitation and let the red rope drop. "You enjoy yourself," he said with a smile. The lobby of the Adrian Hecht Center for the Performing Arts resembled a high-tech cathedral, peaked ceiling displaying bones, immense steel girders with oval cutouts. The floor was an intriguing mix of circles, squares, and triangles set in marble and granite, a patchwork of contrasting textures. Huge crimson rugs with the Hecht logo endlessly repeated provided a jolt of color. There were at least 100 guests wandering the lobby, hooing and awing over Hecht's art collection, hanging from walls, from ceiling beams, mounted on plinths, or crouching in corners. A set of 16th-century samurai armor mounted on a mannequin and enclosed in a plexiglass display case. Another case displayed a dozen of the rare blades, naked steel reflecting 1,000 little lights. Several waiters in black tie circulated with trays of champagne, and there was a buffet in the corner presided over by a chef in a white toque. The gently curved glass front wall arced 30 feet to the ceiling. Sarah scanned the crowd for David, but couldn't see him. She made a beeline through the growing horde. Might as well eat something while she had the chance. She was on her third bacon-wrapped shrimp when she sensed a presence at her shoulder. The smart young thing with blank white hair, pierced chin, and silk jacket over black silk tee looked familiar. "Hi," he said, flashing high-priced choppers. "I'm Rondo." She shook his hand. "Sarah Pezzini. You don't know who I am, do you?" he said with an air of jovial expectancy. He had a strange, toothy, East Coast accent that sounded made up. "Sure I do. You're Rondo. You just said so. Maybe you've heard of my band, flying stank fish. Sarah paused. If he were trying to be witty, he was incredibly dry. He wasn't trying to be witty. He was some self-involved rock star who expected her to know who he was. Sorry, your 15 minutes haven't come up yet. Excuse me, he retorted, somewhat aghast. But she was already cruising toward the front entrance, where James Bratton had entered with a tall, thin, model on his arm. His gaze fell on Sarah and he headed her way, towing the model like a skiff. Officer, arrest this woman? She incited in indecent thoughts. Hello, James. Sarah, Selke. Selke, Sarah. Sarah recognized the Somalian model. She was 6'2" and weighed 140 pounds, with Nefertiti cheekbones and cinnamon skin. A string quartet in some distant corner dove into Vivaldi with a small splash. Have you seen our host? Sarah asked. You probably have a better view from up there. Bratton looked around with the slightly self-conscious profile of the well-known celebrity. He was gratified by the subdued murmuring of his name. Nope. That's all right, though. Adrian's always late. You still seeing that sword polisher? Yup. I'm supposed to meet him here. That's good. David's a fine lad. Hey, there's my man Calvin. Bratton veered off like a fighter jet going into combat, moving to intercept his teammate Calvin Broadbent. Selke gave an indulgent smile. He's like that. Always rushing off, every second, a new interest. He sees life like a child. I envy him. Me too. Sometimes I think I am too sophisticated to enjoy life. Sarah scanned the crowd for Hecht or David. There were at least 200 people now swirling across the cubist floor, jumbles of voices rising like startled pigeons. How so? I have had nothing to drink, nothing to smoke, nothing to snort, and nothing to shoot now for 2 weeks. Can you believe it? Sarah reappraised the ectomorphic model. There had been rumors of drug use, but who cared what a bunch of overpaid models did in their spare time? Selke looked serious, with a sober gleam in her eye. I'm sorry, I have nothing to compare it to. You seem perfectly normal to me, Sarah offered. The woman's face split in a supernatural smile. Thank you, she said warmly, extending her hand. A steady clinking penetrated the throng, and conversation gradually slipped away. All heads turned toward a cantilevered balcony extending over the lobby like the prow of a ship. There stood Hecht, striking the metal rail repeatedly with a silver spoon. Sarah wondered if it had been in his mouth when he was born. Behind him, at a slightly lesser elevation, stood a flush-faced David, grinning like an idiot, light striking his glasses in such a way that the lenses appeared to be a field of white. He was clutching a long narrow object shrouded in an elaborately decorated padded silk brocade bag. Greetings? Hecht boomed from the bottom of his diaphragm. He had a good voice to begin with, and had taken CEO and public speaking training. Greetings and salutations from Hecht. Thank you for honoring us with your presence on this, our inaugural night, the official grand opening of the Hecht Center for the Performing Arts. The crowd applauded enthusiastically for such a well-heeled bunch. Sarah noted the imperial we. She tried to catch David's eye, and there it was. He took the glasses off, winked, blew her a kiss. As she responded, Selke nodded approvingly. Bratton returned and took the model's hand. The three of them looked like Russian nesting dolls standing next to each other. I had planned to treat you all to a performance of 42nd Street, but the auditorium isn't finished. In fact, only this room is finished, so we're having the party in here. In a little while, Mama Digdown's brass band will walk among you, along with some of the more energetic members of the Peach Haddison Dance Company. As some of you know, today's my birthday. Happy birthday, you old weasel. Cried a drunk. Thank you, Cyril. And don't let go of that young man you're leaning on. Laughter. Other comments. Hecht made a downboy gesture with his hands. I didn't tell you, because I didn't want you to bring me gifts. I have everything I need tonight. Many of you know I have a passion of samurai swords and have, in fact, made my own modest contribution to the art and hobby. Some of my pieces are on display in the lobby tonight. I'm proud to announce a new addition to my collection, and something that should create a bit of a stir in the world of collectors. He turned and David handed him the silk-wrapped bundle, turned, stepped crisply off the balcony and disappeared from view. Hecht held the long narrow package before him for a moment, as expectations built. Here it comes, Sarah thought. Skyroot. As aficionados know, a debate has raged about the origin of the swordsmith Muramasa, the most famous or should I say infamous sword maker in Japanese history. No one doubts the existence of the later period Muramasa, his sons, cousins, and descendants. But of the original legendary Muramasa, the rival of Masamune, there has been much doubt, until now. With the aid and assistance of many people, including Hanami Kozen and the NBTHK, I have acquired and authenticated the first Muramasa's last and greatest sword. The legendary, Skyroot. He fiddled with the large tassels and heavy cord tying the padded treasure bag shut. The silk brocade came off. The slender, curving, lacquered black scabbard emerged. Gripping the scabbard in one hand and the handle in the other, Hecht slowly drew the blade, extending the shimmering steel toward the ceiling. The bright temper line, a pattern of rolling flame. The upper surface engraved with stylized dragons and indecipherable ancient runic kanji. Someone started clapping, Bratton joined enthusiastically, then everyone. A triumphant moment for Hecht. As he expertly slid the blade back into its sheath, tracing an ellipse in the air, jugglers, dancers, and acrobats appeared, and a 9-piece brass band, lean young men in hip-hop clothes, chugged out of an alcove pumping when the saints go marching in on trombone, trumpet, tuba, and snare drum. Chiseled young men and glamorous young women wearing discreet navy HCPA jackets released confetti and glitter from the upper decks. Something for everyone, including the unions, who would clean up in the morning. Heck, Sarah thought. They're cleaning up right now. She spotted the local Teamsters president yucking it up with the junior senator. Warm breath gusted Sarah's cheek. David put an arm around her and pulled her close. "Sorry I'm late," he whispered. "You're just in time," she whispered back. "Was that your rush job? That sword for Hecht?" "Yes. Sorry I couldn't tell you, but I was sworn to secrecy." Sarah closed her hand around her tiny suede Louis Vuitton purse, feeling the hard outline of the 25 auto. David had had Skyroot in his house while they'd made love. Why hadn't the Witchblade said something? White-hot pain flooded her right arm from the tips of her fingers to her shoulders. Dipped in acid. Her forehead scrunched and she bit her lip. "What's wrong?" David asked, immediately sensing her distress. A force rippled through the crowd on her right. The pain went away, replaced by a relief that made her gasp with gratitude. She staggered. The heavy metallic gauntlet appeared, a stark contrast to her ephemeral gown. David gripped her arm, startled. "What is that?" Sarah looked up. No good. She was too short. But she knew what had happened. Sharp had passed her, heading for the stairs. Suddenly the Witchblade was doing its job, sensing danger, putting two and two together. Sharp and the sword. Or, more accurately, whichever of the samurai ghosts was most fierce and the sword. She took off, threading through the throng. The crowd thinned behind the groaning board, toward the broad, curving stair leading to the balcony. Sharp was halfway up the stair, just as Hecht appeared on the landing halfway down. "Sharp?" Sarah yelled. He did not respond. Hecht paused at the landing, holding the sword in both hands. Sarah saw Hecht form the words. "Sharp, what is it?" Sharp never slowed. His left hand shot out, clipping Hecht on the chin. Sharp's right hand grabbed the blade and he kept on going. A few others saw what happened and gasped. David appeared at her elbow. "What the hell was that?" She turned and grabbed him by the arms. "David, listen. Find the chief of security and tell him to meet me here." "What's going on?" "Just do it." She raced up the steps, cursing herself for not alerting security as soon as she'd arrived. But it was all circumstantial. Until Sharp hit Hecht, there had been no proof he'd so much as jaywalked. Hecht was sitting on the marble landing, legs splayed, feeling his jaw. "Are you all right?" Sarah snapped. Hecht goggled. She'd forgotten the Witchblade, encasing her right arm to just below the elbow. "Don't look at me. Are you all right?" "Yeah, what the hell?" Sarah kicked off her strappy heels and sprinted up the stairs two at a time, feeling in her purse for the Beretta. Without breaking stride, she hung her badge around her neck and tossed the bag over her shoulder. 20 feet ahead of her, crimson arced across her path, hit the gray marble. A security guard, pale blue shirt drenched crimson, staggered backwards from between naked iron girders, designer rusted to henna. He collapsed, half turned toward her, one hand extended. He'd been nearly cleaved in two with a horrendous slash from shoulder to waist like a Sam Brown belt. Confusion mixed with calliope music drifted from below. Sarah could sense men running, weapons being drawn, but so far she was alone. She stepped to her right, back into the shadows where the girders created a separate gallery. Sharp stood with his back to her at the end of the long corridor, facing the wall, the bloody sword in his right hand. He'd thrown the scabbard away. Sarah went into a shooter's stance, both hands cupped around the tiny Beretta. At this distance, she doubted she could hit him, much less bring him down. And she didn't want to get any closer. "Sharp? Police. Drop the sword and get down on the floor." She heard someone running up behind her, the quick slap of leather on stone. "David, stay back," she hurled over her shoulder. "Are you all right?" he said from right behind her. "David, go downstairs. You're not helping." Her eyes never left Sharp, who still stood with his back to her. He turned, chin buttoned to his chest, regarding them through loony, hooded eyes. "Sharp," Sarah snapped, drawing a careful bead on his center mass. "Drop the sword and get down on the ground. I will shoot you." "He's not Sharp," David hissed. "Look at him." Abruptly, David fired off staccato Japanese, the only word of which Sarah recognized was shigeyoshi. At the mention of that word, Sharp snapped into chūden no kami, holding the blade in front of him with both hands, the point directed at David's throat. Sarah heard the zing of metal on metal. David stepped forward holding one of the long swords from Hex exhibit with two hands in a classic kendo ready stance. "David, stop it, get the hell out of here. I know what I'm doing," he said through his teeth. Holding the pistol in her left hand, she reached with her gauntleted right, grabbed him by the collar of his jacket, and pulled him forcefully backward. He twisted loose, leaving the jacket behind. Oh my god! A horrific realization. Poor foolish David was going to get himself killed, trying to protect her, and it would be all her fault. An elevator gonged. Hushed voices, the quiet mutter of dispersal. Two men in pale blue of the security force dashed around the corner gripping riot batons and ran smack into a propeller. Sharp took one step, shifted his shoulders, and sliced through the first one's neck like a cheese log, continuing the motion downward at an angle as the second guard ran into the suddenly inert body of his companion. Blood soaked the blade, covering its arcane engravings, dripping down, staining the silk wrappings of the handle. David stopped when the men had appeared, giving Sarah an opportunity to catch up with him. Her gauntleted hand shot out, striking him just above the elbow. The sword fell to the floor with a pure ding. David looked at her with surprise, mingled with pain. "Don't make me handcuff you. Go downstairs now." She shoved him forcefully and he grudgingly retreated a few feet, hurt expression on his face. The last thing she needed was a distraction. Sharp/Shigeyoshi had just killed three men. He advanced, blade like a dousing rod, speaking Japanese. Sharp wore a black silk t-shirt beneath a silver jacket, loose-fitting black cotton trousers. His sneaker-clad feet edged forward without leaving the floor. He looked demented, mouth a slash. Sarah was ready to shoot. She braced herself, cupped the pistol, aiming at his thigh, knowing she shouldn't play around, especially not with the sadly underpowered 25 caliber, knowing she should let him have five right in the torso, and then the witchblade tossed the gun away. It flipped the gun off at an angle like a frisbee. Sarah stared at her hand like it was an alien thing. It was an alien thing. Betrayal. Sharp was upon her. The blade whistled, a silver blur. The witchblade twitched, subtle as a hummingbird's wings, and caught Skyroot in its center with a splang, closing around the blade. Sarah was too astonished to move, right arm extended, feet in a wide stance, braced for the impact. Sharp froze too, a ghostly expression on his face, as if he were emerging from a long sleep. His muscles remained fully engaged, thrusting forward with all his strength. Sarah's nylon stockinged feet slid backwards on the newly polished floor, but she did not yield, nor did the witchblade, its embrace of Skyroot complete and unbreakable. Sharp stopped and reversed direction, drawing the blade out of Sarah's grip with a teeth-rattling ching. A synapse-popping shock whip cracked up Sarah's arm and burrowed down into her center. Her arm was numb to the shoulder, but continued to move, controlled by the witchblade. The volatile mix of emotions left her shaken. Sharp looked confused as well. He withdrew, sliding backwards. The witchblade urged her forward. Skyroot came alive in Sharp's hands and appeared to be struggling. In a gobsmack of insight, Sarah understood. Skyroot was like the witchblade, only male. They were drawn to each other, as Udo had been drawn to the Lady Sakura. Although that encounter had not ended well for the lady. Sharp gripped the blade in both hands like an aluminum baseball bat and dragged it backwards. It appeared to have great weight. Sarah glanced behind her. It looked like Hecht had rallied two NYPD blues from out front and was directing them toward her. David was gone, presumably back downstairs. Thank God. She couldn't bear the thought of being responsible for his death, having to live with that. Sarah was strong, but the weight of it, the guilt, she knew it would crush her. And even worse, it was distracting her. Sarah couldn't wait. She had to get to Sharp before anyone else got hurt. She turned the corner just in time to see the elevator doors shut, in a bank of four leading to the unfinished ballroom on the fifth and top floor. Paused by the closed doors, a revelation. Her training dictated that she contain the threat and wait for backup, but she had to get to Skyroot. Whose idea was that, hers or the Witchblade? The thought birthed a tiny spark of terror in her heart. Was she still in control or had the Witchblade achieved dominance without her notice? The Witchblade did not wait for the crisis of conscience to be resolved. It demanded action. Like the flying fickle finger of fate, A protrusion from the Witchblade's index finger made a beeline to the button and the decision was made. The doors gonged open and into the elevator she went, just as the two cops skated around the corner, guns drawn, one high, one low. "Hold your fire?" the high one cried, as the elevator door slid shut. Kenny G played softly on the sound system. It was only audible in the elevators. Sarah stood with her back against the wall, feeling the cool marble tiles on her bare skin and through the sheer fabric of her diaphanous dress. She watched the digital display count up to 5. The doors dinged and slid open. Sarah braced herself, ready for anything. The door had opened on a broad area of indeterminate depth, lit only through reflected light streaming through the immense arched windows that encircled the ballroom like a crown. The Witchblade was inert, awaiting her command. An instant ago it had been alive, driving her on. "What do you want?" she snarled. "Help me or get lost." Witchblade leading, Sarah came out of the elevator fast and low. She was behind a colonnade marking the grand ballroom, with its inlaid wood floor, cut into a vast map of the world. America was oak, South America was mahogany, teak from Thailand, cedars from the Middle East. The oceans were alternating strips of ash and maple, cut into a wave pattern. Sharp knelt on the Canary Islands, sword thrust before him. "Help me," he groaned. "Derek?" Sarah asked, cautiously edging forward. She did not regret the loss of her gun. It wouldn't have done any good. "Derek, can you understand me?" He looked up with haunted eyes. The mask of death was gone. "Sarah, stay back. It's the sword. It wants me to kill." The thing twitched, gleaming in the city light. Sharp looked like he was trying to hold it still. It vibrated, casting off shimmering rays of light. Sarah stopped 10 feet away, Witchblade held placatingly forward, inert for now. Who does it want to kill?" His eyes were pleading. "Everybody," he said in a hoarse whisper. His face twisted, mouth a grimace, some internal struggle taking place. "Run," he screamed, rising, struggling with the blade, gripping the handle like a mountain climber at the end of his rope. It turned toward her, dragging Sharp like a pull toy. He was trying to hold it upright, but the blade bent in a tight little curve. It yanked Sharp along like a kid on water skis. It dragged him across the polished hardwood floor, his heels emitting a rodent-like screech. "Let go," she barked, backing up, feet describing alternating crescents, never leaving the ground. "Let go of it. I can't," Sharp wailed in a voice frayed with pain. Skyroot flicked, a god's eyelash. The Witchblade rose to meet it. The impact caused a crack to appear in one of the glass arcs overlooking Battery Park. The very air seemed to come alive and punch her, everywhere at once. Sarah was deaf. The mask descended on Sharp's face and he and the blade were one, attacking with savage fury, leaving a quicksilver figure 8 in the air. Sarah was forced backwards by the overwhelming attack. She had no chance to think, to plan strategy. The Witchblade thought for her, parrying, trying to hang on. As Sharp withdrew the blade, Sarah could actually feel the metal splitting. Not deep enough to reach her hand. But it was parting before the samurai sword, acknowledging a superior force. Her head was filled with buzzers, fire alarms, tinnitus, black noise. Her eyes were filled with tears of rage and frustration. The gemstone at her wrist blazed a reddish orange like the heart of a forge. She cursed the Witchblade and in that instant it sprouted a scythe, index, and middle finger blending into one. Sharp reversed direction and thrust forward like a fencer. The Witchblade rose. Snick snack. It made a faint metallic whisper as it cut through Sharp's arm above the wrist. Sword in hand fell heavily to the floor, dappling the finely finished ash with the suggestion of a chrysanthemum. Sarah panted like a spent border collie, supporting herself with her hands on her knees, the delicate fabric of her emerald gown clinging to her perspiration. Her blade was gone, faint afterimage of a quicksilver loop. Skyroot lay on the wood floor still in Sharp's grip, blood spreading, tip of the blade thrust skyward. Ever so slowly, it began to descend, a recalcitrant lever, until it touched the ground. One by one, the fingers of Sharp's hand let go. Sharp had staggered back until he hit one of the iron girders, slid to the floor clutching his pumping stump. The sight of his blood gouting forth like a kid's bubbler snapped Sarah out of her trance. She was on him in 3 steps, had his belt off in 3 seconds. It was narrow, made of some kind of lizard skin, and had probably cost more than her entire wardrobe. Sharp was going into shock. She got the belt around his forearm below the elbow and drew it tight. "You're going to be all right, Derek. I have to stop the flow of blood. You're going into shock, okay? That's normal. Breathe deep, from the pit of your stomach. There's an ambulance on the way." Was there? Where the hell was everybody? Her hand blazed. The Witchblade extended a particularly ferocious manifestation with a sound like wind chimes. Hooked claws, articulated spines at the knuckles and armored tendrils winding all the way up her arm culminating in heavy layered shoulder plates. And then the power went out.